back to another episode. I'm Trista.
And I'm Crystal.
And today's topic is spooky Wild West.
Wow, you just jumped right past any, hey, we've been gone for 6 months
We apologize every time. We're just gonna move on with it at this point. They know.
Well, I think, I don't even know when our last episode was, but I'm pretty sure that since then, all of Northern California's been on fire. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm ready for snow and spooky Halloween season. But this is not about spooky Halloween, although it is kind of spooky. There's ghosts.
It is very spooky.
So I don't know what you're doing. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I can go first.
Okay.
So, I was keeping on your Wild West theme, but I also didn't know what to do, and I finally found this spooky ghost town that has lots of spooky things in it, but they're not, like, spookier than ghosts.
Okay, like, they're spooky like what?
You're gonna find out. Okay, so it takes place in a town called Elizabethtown, and it's a ghost town in New Mexico, and it was a big mining town that once provided for over 7,000 people. And this all started 1 year after the Civil War, when Captain William H. Moore, who was at a Union base, met a Native American whose name I couldn't find no matter where I looked.
That's irritating.
Yeah, it was. This Native American wanted to trade some rocks for supplies. And then Moore realized that the rocks had, like, lots of copper, so he asked the Native American to show him where these rocks were. And the Native American agreed, because, like, they're gonna get supplies out of it, and that's what they wanted. And so he led Moore and several soldiers to the area that would soon be called Elizabethtown.
I like how original that is.
Yeah.
They were just like, Elizabethtown.
Yeah, Captain Moore, he named the town after his 4-year-old daughter, Elizabeth. So it's Elizabethtown.
It's a real unusual name.
Yeah, and fun fact, his daughter, Elizabeth, was a school teacher, and she lived there. She lived in Elizabethtown her entire life. So.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, Moore started panning at a river nearby, and he discovered gold. And as one could expect, all the men collectively lost their minds and started panning for gold as if their life depended on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, winter was coming in, and they didn't want to die. So they all made a promise to each other, like, we're not going to tell anybody about this. And then we're going to come back and get all this gold for ourselves. But they all failed to keep their mouth shut, every single one. So in 1860...
They're all a bunch of braggarts.
Yeah.
I found gold.
Mm-hmm. So in 1867, in the spring, floods of people wanting to find gold surged into the area. And this dude named Lucien B. Maxwell, who was, like, the only person living there, he owned the area. He started charging miners to use his land and even built a road and then charged people to use the road.
Nice.
And then,
He's an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. And then he and Moore soon...
Oh my god, there's, like, a very loud motorcycle driving outside. I apologize to your ears.
He and Moore soon joined forces and created the Copper Mining Company the same year. And, of course, they were the ones to find the first big load of gold. And then pretty soon people started building shops to make money off of the miners. And then the miners, to, like, have homes or whatever, built homes. And then, boom, a town. And so, as I said, Moore named the town after his 4-year-old daughter, Elizabeth. And in 1868, there were around 400 people living there, but the population would rise and fall depending on the weather because you couldn't mine in the winter, and so everyone would lose interest and then leave. And as soon as they were like, oh my god, we found gold, everyone and their mother came back.
Hmm.
And so...
It was like a boom and bust town.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But the few long-term residents that lived there had to deal with gunmen, such as Clay Allison, who we'll talk about later, drunks, and raids by Native Americans. And one of these long-term residents was Charles Kennedy, and he owned a traveler's rest thing on a road that connected Elizabethtown to...
Taos?
Taos, yeah. Are you reading my notes?
I just looked over and you were struggling to say Taos. So
the word hadn't even left my mouth. Don't look over here. It's supposed to be a mystery.
I'm sorry. I'm not looking.
Exactly. Anyways, he let travelers stay at his home, and then he would, like, feed them and, like, let them rest, you know, because it's a rest for travelers or whatever, like a hotel thing. But as soon as they registered, he would murder them.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. He would steal all of their belongings and either bury or burn the bodies, and he is thought to have killed between 14 to 20 people this way before he was caught. And it was his wife...
So, what is the... There is a movie... Is it the something eight? The Hateful Eight or something?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
Never mind. I don't know enough of what I'm talking about. Forget I said that.
Okay. Okay. My mic just fell. Okay. It was his wife, Rosa, who ratted him out. And what happened is, like, this is, like, from all the websites I read from, there's no, like, concrete story. There's just kind of, like, the widely accepted story. And how the story goes is that, pay attention, a traveler had stayed at the rest place, and he was getting ready to eat dinner with the family. And there had been lots of, like, raids in the area. So he asked the family, like, hey, has there been lots of raids around here? Because he's traveling from Elizabethtown to
Taos.
And so he's like, has there been a lot of raids around here? I'm a little nervous. And then Charles' 9-year-old son had replied something along the lines of, can't you smell the one that dad put under the floor?
Oh my God. Kids are always ratting you out.
Yeah, and Charles didn't take that very well, and
he
shot the traveler in the face when he tried to escape, and then he...
Can you imagine the, like, what did his children grow up to be? More serial killers? Because, like,
His child died, because Charles bashed his head into the fireplace.
Oh, great.
For warning the traveler.
Jesus, God.
So he didn't grow up.
Well, that's horrifying.
Mm-hmm. But,
please tell me they burned him at the stake or something cool.
I'll tell you. His wife, who had already been, like, scared of, like, the previous killings, went ballistic when her son died, and he locked, her in the house and then tossed the bodies into the basement, and then he got drunk and passed out. And Rosa was able to escape through the chimney of the house, and then she ran to Elizabethtown, and she went to a saloon and started telling everyone her story.
Mm-hmm.
And in the saloon was Clay Allison, who was an ex-Confederate soldier, gunslinger, and a drunk, and the sheriffs widely regarded him as a danger to himself and others because he accidentally shot himself in the foot once.
Oh, wow.
He rode naked on a horse through the town.
He would need to be in custody for his own safety. Yeah.
And if there was ever any kind of, like, violent thing happening, he was part of it in some way.
Okay.
Like, he would hop on the bandwagon.
I feel like I know some people like that.
And there's also Davy Crockett there.
Okay.
A politician. And they listened to Rosa's story, and Allison, who had been heavily drinking, was, as I said, an extremely violent man, was known to be involved in almost every fight, so obviously he immediately went to Rosa's home, and he led a search for Kennedy, while others went to find evidence, and find evidence they did. They found charred bones in the fireplace, bodies in the basement, and skulls around, like, the yard.
It's a freaking nightmare. Mm-hmm. How come I've never heard of this?
I don't know, man. Elizabethtown, it doesn't exist anymore. It's only, like, a few, like, stone walls that are left.
So, I feel like also the people in Elizabethtown would have been, like, kind of pissed off, because how many tourists or travelers are you getting? And he's just murdering them all on the way?
Yeah.
It's like, dude.
A lot of places I read said that people think he killed 14 to 20 people, but this one website I read was the outlier that was like, he could have killed 200, and I was like...
Oh, great. It's like...
I was like, oh, wow.
A huge gap.
Yeah. And they found Kennedy, who was still drunk, and they arrested him. And then they were going to give him a court, but there were rumors that his lawyer was going to buy his freedom. And Clay Allison, didn't want that and kidnapped Kennedy from the jail with help of his companions.
I feel like I kind of like Clay Allison.
Eh,
I mean, in this situation.
Yeah.
I'm okay with him offing them.
And there's two different stories, really. The first story is that he put a rope around Kennedy's neck and then dragged him with a horse up and down the streets until his head came off.
Oh, ew.
And then the other story is that he just sliced Kennedy's head off. But whatever the means, the end result was a decapitated head.
Wow.
And,
That's gross. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, and the story goes that Clay Allison put the decapitated head onto the, a pike, and then put it in front of a saloon. So, that's fun. And the townspeople didn't want his body buried in the cemetery.
Oh, yeah, of course not.
Yeah, and so he was buried just outside of, the cemetery. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Yard?
No, he was buried the lines or whatever. I don't know. He wasn't in the cemetery.
He wasn't in sacred ground.
Yeah. And so,
I mean, I'm surprised they buried him anywhere in the town instead of just leaving his body out for the birds or something. Because that's some crazy...
They left his head out for the horror. Birds.
So what happened to his wife?
I couldn't find. Everyone just stopped the story there as soon as he died and never, recounted anything. Mm. So I don't know what happened to his wife. Hopefully Rose is okay.
I feel like that was the most horrifically abusive marriage I've ever heard of, and I hope that she made it out okay, even though her son was killed.
Yeah.
That was traumatizing.
Kind of a bummer. Anyways, so it's not spooky like ghosts, but you got a serial killer. And there were a lot of serial killers in, the Wild West because you couldn't really catch them.
So, serial killers like that? Mm-hmm. Or do you count serial killers as, gunslingers who were just killing people all the time but not necessarily, that kind of serial killer?
I haven't really thought about that. I guess I put gunslingers into a different category because they're more like outlaws, criminals who kind of just like getting into fights and just causing havoc. And serial killers are out for the blood. They want to kill somebody.
Okay. So, was there any other famous serial killers? How long did this town last?
I don't remember, but it shut down.
I've never heard of it in my life. How far is it? I'm asking you too many questions in a row, but how far is it from Albuquerque?
From what?
The main city in New Mexico.
I didn't even know that was, a real city until now.
That's where your great-grandfather is from. So that was horrifying.
Yeah.
Today I'm going to be talking about the curse of Bodie Ghost Town.
I love Bodie.
I do, too.
We should go.
I plan to again. But everyone really liked the Lake Tahoe episode, so I figured that I would do another one that was centered on a specific place instead of, a mythical creature.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Bodie is, it's a Wild West ghost town located east of the Sierra Nevada Mountains in Mono County, California. It was a boom town in the late 60s and 70s.
Ooh.
And at one point it had about 10,000 people, which is insane because it's not
particularly Elizabeth town by a lot.
And it's not an easy place to get to. Even today, it's...
Dude, going up that road was terrifying.
It's real sketchy to get there. It's not just, on your way to anywhere. It's literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, so, you gotta go up, first you go off the main road, and then it's several miles of, paved road, but then you hit dirt roads, and you're going up the side of, mountains for another several miles.
Yeah.
And then you finally hit Bodie, and it's, nestled in between all these mountain peaks.
Yeah, so, it's also at an elevation of 8,300 feet or so. So it gets a lot of snow. And it started out as most towns in California at this time because of gold mining. And there were several large mines there. The mines produced over $34 million in gold and silver, which today I looked it up, and it would $34 million would be about $911 million today. So, like, almost $1 billion. At its height, Bodie had 65 saloons lining Main Street.
65?
Yeah. So, when you go there now, it's...
it's only a fraction of its former self.
Well, yes, but... In terms of just, like, buildings there, there was a huge fire, like, I think in the 30s or 40s. And so it burned down most of the town. So what's left is not, it's not really indicative of, like, what it looked like in its heyday.
Yeah, there was also a really big fire in Elizabethtown that wiped out basically, like, everything. Then there was, like, a couple residents, but then when they left, the town fully just, like, died. I think if you're a ghost town, you have to have at least, like, one town-wiping fire to qualify.
It's part of the deal to get into ghost town lore. So, they had, like, a million saloons, they had a red light district, a Chinatown section, and they actually had a railroad that came directly to the town.
Oh!
I didn't realize that until That's I cool. was, like... looking up stuff on it. So, by the 1880s, the population had already begun to decline. So it was only a huge town for, like, a decade. Like, it was not a very long... it didn't have a long life. So, a lot of, like, single miners who were out to get rich quick had already moved on to other gold strikes. Mm-hmm. And the gold that they were mining was declining as well. So in 1915, Bodie was first described as a ghost town. And the railroad was shut down. They took up all of the tracks to recycle the metal. And it's
so that's why there's no tracks.
Yeah, it's like it just didn't exist.
I didn't see any Could train you imagine, tracks when we went.
Like... Laying railroad tracks is a nightmarish job. Like, could you imagine just busting your ass and getting this railroad to Bodie and then 10 years later, they're like, oh, no. I mean, it wasn't 10 years later.
And then your superiors are like, now do it in reverse.
Yeah. Go ahead and rewind that. So there were still a handful of people that continued to live there until the 1940s, and caretakers were hired to keep looters out, and in the 1960s it was designated as a National Historic Landmark and a California State Park. It's been maintained in what is described as arrested decay, and like anytime you read about it, they're like, keep it in arrested decay. It's like,
doesn't that basically mean like they're not like repairing anything? They're kind of just letting it fall apart, but fall apart respectfully.
So they keep them preserved, but they don't fix anything with new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was just going to describe. So, like, homes and businesses are kept just as they were when the residents left. And you can look through the windows and see furniture and dishes and everyday items of families and businesses.
Yeah, I remember looking into there's, like, the little schoolhouse.
Yeah, the schoolhouse is creepy.
And I looked through the windows, and there was still, like, a lesson plan written up on the board, and I was
I feel like the schoolhouse freaks me out the most. I don't know why.
I remember the church freaked me out a little bit, and I went, hello, is there any ghosts here? And you look like you're about to smack me.
Yeah, like, how dare you? I don't want them to follow me.
Well, it's fine, is you don't, like, pick anything up.
Anyways, I have a million pictures from when we visited the park that I'll put on our Instagram page, but, so, as with most Wild West towns, there was a lot of violence, especially in the early days, which inevitably leads to hauntings. Mm-hmm. And Bodie has no shortage of ghost stories. It was said to be the second, it was said that the second busiest business, that's really hard to say, busiest business in Bodie, besides the saloons, was the morgue, and that there was a shooting every day, at least one shooting every day.
Sounds like a lively town.
Yeah, so I'll cover some of those in a second, but the main curse of Bodie is that anyone who removes any item from the park will be cursed with bad luck or ill health, etc. Even a rock or a nail or a piece of glass. This legend was apparently started by staff of the state park to keep people from looting historical items, but it's become so entrenched in Bodie lore that people not only believe it, but the park receives apology letters every single week. for, you know, decades now, with trinkets that they took from the park enclosed, begging forgiveness for testing the curse because they've had such awful luck.
Oof.
So these letters have become such a common occurrence that staff kind of dread them because each... there is a siren right now. That's loud. Where was I at?
The staff,
Okay. So, because each letter means filing a police report for the theft of historical artifacts. So...
Oh, wait, they have to do a report with each one?
No matter how tiny, like, it's a shard of glass, and it's like, they have to do a police report. And can you imagine how irritated the police department is there? For all these people. Can you imagine how
irritated the staff are? They're constantly like, don't take things, you'll be cursed. And people are like, I don't believe you. And then they send the package back, and the staff is like, I have to pay the repercussions. I have to write the report.
It's Do they have
like a designated report person? All they do is write reports.
They probably do. Like, whoever was the last one hired on, like the grunt worker, they're like, you have to be on report writing, police report writing. Okay, so anyways, I wonder if the
police department has its own, like, Bodie section. They just automatically put it there.
They probably just have, like, a template, and they're just, like, fill in the item here. And it's, like, no one has to write it. It's just, like, this is what we'll fill in this little
blank. They probably got it down by now.
Yeah, I'm sure. So anyways, some examples of these letters, which range from several page narratives to one sentence apologies, say things like, so sorry for picking these up. I love antiques, and being a Christian, I felt so guilty for taking these on Monday, not to mention Tuesday we got a flat tire and my husband hit his head on a rock. That was in 1998. Another in 2017 stated, this nail was taken from the town of Bodie. Also, who wants bad luck? Please put it back for me. Another letter stated...
Wait, I have a question.
Okay.
When they, like, take it, do the staff have to, like, try and figure out where they took it from? Or do they just, like, toss it back into the park and call it good, and then they're not cursed anymore?
That's actually kind of a lecture I was saving for the end, but I can let you know now. No, it's fine. So, they don't know exactly where in the park any of these, especially the little tiny things like nails or pieces of glass came from, and so they don't get put back in their original context, and that... is really kind of what pisses me off about this whole story, because it's like they put them in like certain spots of the museum because they can't know exactly where they were, so they're taken out of like the whole immersive experience of going to Bodie is like everything is how it was left.
Yeah.
And so when people take stuff, it ruins that for generations to come. And if there ever were something discovered to where, you know, there was like a historical, you know, an archaeological expedition or something to dig, they don't have those original clues that would have been around because people have taken them.
Aww.
So, it's irritating. But, I got sidetracked.
Sorry.
So, I was reading weird letters. Okay, so another letter stated, please find enclosed one weather-beaten old shoe. This shoe was removed from Bodie during the month of August 1978. My trail of misfortune is so long and depressing it can't be listed here. So not only do people claim to be mired in bad luck in their careers, relationships, etc. after removing an item from the park, but there are also some who claim to have hauntings or poltergeist experiences in their homes after they bring the artifacts home.
Oh.
So that's all creepy, but apparently life goes back to normal when they mail their artifacts back to Bodie. So let's talk about the haunting that allegedly happens at Bodie. So
I have a creepy ghost story from Bodie once you're done.
Okay. So these are all, you can Google the pictures of these various houses I'm going to mention at Bodie, but I'm just going to give like kind of a brief little haunting story about a few of them. So at the Gregory House, an apparition of an elderly woman is often seen rocking in the rocking chair, knitting.
Why didn't I get to see a ghost when I went there?
I feel like...
all I got was, like, spooky feelings and sounds. I didn't get to see a ghost.
When we went there, it was like, a weekend day in the summer, and it was full of people. I feel like the ghosts weren't, like, super active. They were like, there's too many people here. because we gotta go. And I was like fully expecting some kind of ghosty thing, and it was like nothing.
We gotta go on like a Monday in the middle of winter.
Oh, you can't get there in winter.
We gotta go on like a Monday
Peak tourist time. Covered in feet of snow. You're not getting there. You'll die. You'll be roll one of the off ghosts. The cliffs. Okay, so wait, where am I at? So there's an old woman, rocking in a rocking chair knitting, and sometimes the rocking chair will just rock by itself. And also, to clarify, some of the houses that are still like pretty sturdy, the rangers and their families will live there because there's like a team of rangers that man the whole park, you know.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere around. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So some of them live at this park during the tourist season or whatever. So they are actually the source of a lot of the creepy haunting stories because they're actually living in these houses that are haunted.
I kind of want to live up in a haunted
house. I think it'd be the coolest job ever in the history of the world.
I think it'd be too much of a baby, though.
You would be. But if you didn't need to confirm that. If you weren't, like, just living by yourself, you'd probably be okay. Okay, so in the Mendocini house, it has apparitions of laughing and playing children that follow around rangers and guests. Which, I can't handle laughing ghost children. That's, like, the creepiest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not about it.
Yeah.
So, in the John S. Kane house, a former Chinese maid is said to haunt it because of ill treatment she received in life. Mr. Kane's wife wanted her fired because she thought that she was having an affair with her husband. So the maid's reputation was ruined, and she didn't want to become a prostitute, which was like her only other option out there in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So she killed herself.
Oh.
And
looks like there was a second option,
but she was like, she wasn't just a maid. She was like a nanny, and she loved children. She took care of their children.
Aww.
And so, she is said to particularly like her ghosty self likes children.
What? I was like a child. Why didn't I get to see her?
I don't know.
I'm but so upset.
It was cool because my favorite house that I took pictures of, I found out it was this house.
Oh, the one with the vines?
No, the full front of it. I'm going to post a picture, but the full front of it is like windows.
Yeah.
I'll show you a picture with later.
The vines?
I don't think there was...
Not vines, but the greenery.
Anyways, so she is said to make doors open and shut, lights turn on and off. In one story, there was, like, the 15-year-old daughter of a ranger. They were living in this house, and she was staying in this certain bedroom that is haunted by this ghost, allegedly.
Mm.
And she kept turning on the light, like she'd lay in bed and then the lights would turn on.
Dude,
and she kept getting
so annoying.
She got up and kept turning them off, and they kept turning on, and it happened like 5 times until she screamed and ran downstairs to her parents. I was like, I would never go back.
I wish that wish that I could be living in a haunted Bodhi ghost room.
Yeah, same. So, the other thing is that, often children say they see her when they look up at the second story bedroom of that house, they'll see her smiling at them.
Aww.
Through the window. So, like, she's kind of a nice ghostie.
Is there any mean ghosts in Bodhi?
Well, there's some real sketchy people that died there, so we'll see. But, the Bodhi Cemetery has about 80 headstones, but thugs and criminals and sketchy people were buried outside the cemetery.
Like Charles Kennedy.
Yes. The Chinese population had their own cemetery. And what I read was that they just wanted their bones buried long enough to be cleaned so that they could be returned to their families in China. But what's really sad is that there are a ton that are still left there today, like, with no markers. They're just, like, nobody ever brought them home. And so, that's upsetting.
Poor bones.
Yeah.
What about the mine itself? Are there any spooky stories about the mine itself?
Yes, I'm getting there. So, there have been sightings and voices of a little girl thought to be Evelyn Myers.
Why
and
is it
she
always
was,
little girls?
She was the daughter of the general storekeeper who died when she was 3 from a terrible accident that I don't want to repeat because it horrified me.
Why? No, you can't just say that. What was it?
No, it's too gross. I'll tell you later.
What?
So,
you can't just do that.
Google it.
Okay, what is it? I'm going to Google it right now. You can hear the clicky clack of my keyboard.
3-year-old Evelyn Myers died in Bodie. So anyways, and a woman in a white dress roams.
Evelyn. How do you spell Myers? What? I'm Googling. I'm talking.
A woman in a white dress roams the cemetery. Rangers have also heard miners talking and working in the abandoned old mine shafts, which would make sense since a lot of miners died while
on the job. What about the mine shaft?
Dude, are you even
listening? I was Googling! What happened with the mine shaft? Do you hear voices in it?
Yes. So the rangers, like, they're in parts of the mine that are completely closed to any people. And down in these old gnarly mine shafts, they hear voices of people working and, like, mining and talking to each other. And, like, one, they threw rocks down there, and, it, like, down 1,200 feet or something, and they heard a man shouting, like, angrily, like, "Who was that?" or something like that.
It's like the Ghost Adventures episode where they put, yes, like, the deep-sea fishing rod with the GoPro down, and they hear people talking.
I think that was... No, that wasn't.
That wasn't Bodhi. That was the other one.
But Ghost Adventures has done a Bodhi episode. Mm-hmm. I think more than one. Anyways, so, when wait, the wait, town...
Wait. She was just accidentally struck on the head by a pickaxe?
Well, that's not very descriptive, like what I read.
I thought it was going to be a lot more horrifying.
It was. Okay, so anyway, when the town was officially closed, there were still about 8 residents, and one of the men shot his wife in a drunken rage.
Oh, no.
Can you stop interrupting me?
Jesus. Sorry. I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of these men shot his wife in a drunken rage, and 3 other residents went and beat him until he was unconscious, and then he drowned in a creek. Over the next 2 months... his ghost appeared to each of the men who killed him, shaking his fist at them, which is honestly terrifying. Yeah. And they died in quick succession. Oh. One from a huge gash in his face, one from a hemorrhage that made his head swell, and one from falling down a ravine. The last other 3 residents of the town lived to tell this tale of strange deaths. And then eventually everybody moved or died, and it's only park rangers that, you know, live there at certain times of the year now. Yeah. So the moral of the story here is, whether the curse is real or fake, I wouldn't risk it. And in fact, I grilled all of you kids, like, so hard on not even taking a rock, because they're, you know, I figured one of you would probably try sneaking a rock. But also, even if the curse isn't real, it's very irritating that people take historical artifacts, no matter how small, because now that's one less authentic thing for future generations to see.
Yeah. And
selfish cows, you should be cursed. And that is the end of Bodie Ghost Town, which is off 395 in Northern California, and everyone should go check it out. It's very fun.
Don't take anything, though.
Don't take anything.
You better learn your lesson.
Okay. Oh, so as always, no promises on, you know, it might be another year before another episode, but you can, in the meantime,
I honestly forgot this podcast existed,
on social media, and we have a website, friendsinmythology.com. Thanks, bye.
Bye.